going to become. Sheeple is what too many people now are. The excellent news is that this kind of power I speak of is available to anyone alive on the planet today. We might have forgotten and disowned this form of potency we have as life has hurt, disappointed, and confused us. But it's still there waiting for us to build a relationship with it and develop it. All of the great teachers of history owned very few things, you know. When Mahatma Gandhi died, he had about 10 possessions, including his sandals, a watch, his eyeglasses, and a simple bowl to eat from. Mother Teresa, so prosperous of heart and rich with the authentic power to influence millions, died in a tiny room containing almost no worldly goods. When she'd travel, she'd carry all her things in a white cloth bag.
"Why do so many of the heroes of humanity have so little?" asked the artist, now relaxing on the sand.
"Because they've reached a level of individual maturity that allowed them to see the futility of spending their days chasing objects that count for nothing at the end. And they had cultivated their characters to such a degree that they no longer had the common need of most to fill the holes within themselves with distractions, attractions, escapes, and luxuries. The more their appetite for superficial possessions dematerialized, the more hungry they became for substantial pursuits like honoring their creative vision, expressing their inherent genius, and living by a higher moral blueprint. They viscerally understood that being inspirational and masterful and fearless are all inside jobs. And once true power is accessed, external substitutes pale in comparison to the feelings of fulfillment this treasure provides. Oh, and these heavyweights of history, as they discovered their supreme natures, also came to realize that one of the primary aims of a wonderfully crafted life is contribution, impact, usefulness, helpfulness. What business builders might call unlocking stakeholder value. Like I suggested at my seminar before I fell, to lead is to serve. The philosopher Rumi made the point much more brilliantly than I ever could when he observed, "Give up the drop, become the ocean."
"Thanks for sharing," offered the entrepreneur sincerely, sitting down next to the artist on the sand and placing one of her hands carefully only a short distance away from one of his.
"It's good to see you're doing better," mentioned the artist, his boots now off.
He was sockless. As he basked in the strong rays like a sunbathing cat, he asked,
"What the heck happened to you anyway?"
"Exhaustion," confided the spellbinder. "Too many cities, too many airplanes, too many media appearances, too many presentations. I just ground myself down in pursuit of my mission to help people accelerate their leadership, activate their gifts, and become heroes of their lives. I know better."
The spellbinder then pulled off his sleek sunglasses and extended a hand to his two students.
"It's a great pleasure to meet you both."
"You too, brother," the artist replied. "Your work has helped me make it through some tough times."
As the artist spoke these words, he spotted a catamaran overflowing with festively dressed tourists, whizzing along in the distance. Another school of fish called capitaines could be observed swimming busily in the clear water. The spellbinders spied them, smiled broadly, and then continued.
"You must be wondering why I'm here," he stated.
"True," said the entrepreneur, as she took off her shoes and twisted her feet into the white sand alongside her companion.
"Well, I've been advising Mr. Riley since he was a 33-year-old man. All pro athletes have peak performance coaches, and so do all extraordinary business people. You just can't get to iconic alone. He was starting out when we met, but even then he understood that the more one learns, the more one can achieve. Growth is the real sport that the best play every day. Education truly is inoculation against disruption. And as you become better, you will have better within all arenas of your life. I call this the 2x3x mindset. To double your income and impact, triple your investment in two core areas, your personal mastery and your professional capability.
Love it, the artist said as he scratched his flabby belly. Then he picked at a decrepit toenail.
Mr. Riley understood early on that to rise to world class, you need world class support. We've become fantastic friends over the years. We've shared tremendous joys together, like 5-hour-long lunches with palm heart salad, fresh grilled prawns, and excellent French wine here on this private beach of his.
The spellbinder stretched his arms into the air. He looked over at the mighty mountains. He remained silent for a few moments.
And we've experienced deep sorrows together as well. Like the time my buddy got sick with cancer just after his 50th birthday. He appeared to have everything a man could desire, but without his good health, he realized he had nothing. That one changed him. Health is the crown on the well person's head that only the ill person can see, you know? Or as one tradition says, when we are young, we sacrifice our health for wealth, and when we grow old and wise, we realize what's most important and become willing to sacrifice all our wealth for even one day of good health. You never want to be the richest person in the graveyard, you know. He beat it, though, the spellbinder quickly added, staring at the noisy tourists partying on the catamaran. Just like he defends himself against everything that tries to defeat his dreams. Stone's an amazing guy. I love him like a brother. Well, look, it really has been good to meet you both, the spellbinder continued. I heard you were coming. Mr. Riley's tremendously excited to share what he promised he'd share with you about reaching maximum productivity, sustaining exceptional performance, and creating a life you love by coding in a superior morning routine. I'm pleased he's paying it forward and sharing what I, as his mentor, taught him. You'll love all the insights and learning models that will soon be coming your way. The 5 a.m. club will be revolutionary for you both. I know it sounds strange and unbelievable, but being exposed to the methodology Stone is about to teach you will cause outstanding shifts deep within you. Just being around the information will awaken something special in you.
The spellbinder put on his chic sunglasses.
Anyway, Mr. Riley asked me to tell you to make yourselves at home here over the next few days. You won't see a lot of me because I'll be snorkeling, sailing, and fishing most of the time. Fishing is one of the things I most love to do in life. I come down to Mauritius not only to coach the great and kind soul you'll soon meet. I show up here to regenerate and get away from this overcomplicated world of ours, flush with so many difficulties, damaged economies, saturated industries and environmental decays, just to mention a few of the factors that threaten to bring down our creativity, energy, performance, and happiness. I show up here to renew and refuel. Elite production without quiet vacation causes lasting depletion. Rest and recovery isn't a luxury for anyone committed to mastery. It's a necessity. I've taught that principle for many years, yet I forgot it myself and paid the price at the event. I've also learned that inspiration gets fed by isolation, away from the ceaseless digital diversion and mindless over-communication that dominates the hours of the majority these days. And know, too, that your natural genius presents itself when you're most joyful. We get our ideas that change the world when we're rested, relaxed, and filled with delight. This tiny spot in the Indian Ocean helps me re-access my best. It's also a genuine sanctuary of safety, staggering beauty, and awesome gastronomy, with affectionate people who still wear their hearts on their sleeves. I just adore the Mauritians. Most still have an appreciation for the wonders of life's simplest pleasures, like family meals or swimming with friends, followed by sharing a roast chicken dinner purchased from the Super U, washed down with a nice cold can of Phoenix.
Phoenix? Asked the artist.
It's the beer of Mauritius, replied the spellbinder. And I must say that I always leave the island 100 times stronger, faster, centered, and fired up. I really work hard in my everyday life. I hope this doesn't sound like vanity, but I care so much about uplifting society, and am so committed to doing my part to reduce the greed, hatred, and conflict in it. Coming here remakes me, reconnects me to what's important, so I can go back and work for the world. We all work for the world, you know? Anyway, you two have fun, okay? And thanks again for coming to my seminar and for your positive words. They mean more to me than you could ever know. Anyone can be a critic. Takes guts to be an encourager. Being a high-impact leader never requires being a disrespectful person. I wish more leaders understood this principle. Oh, one last thing,
the spellbinder added, as he flicked some sand off his camouflage-patterned surf shorts. What? Asked the entrepreneur in a respectful tone.
Please be here on the beach tomorrow morning. Your training will begin then.
Sure, agreed the entrepreneur. What time?
5 a.m.,
came the reply.
Own your morning. Elevate your life.
Chapter 8. The 5 a.m. Method. The Morning Routine of World Builders. It is well to be up before daybreak, for such habits contribute to health, wealth, and wisdom. Aristotle.
Welcome to the 5 a.m. Club,
the billionaire bellowed as he bounded down the steps from his seaside home.
Bonjour! That's Creole for good morning. You're right on time. I love it. Punctuality is the trait of royalty. At least it is in my playbook. Stone Riley's my name, he declared, as he graciously extended a hand to greet his two guests.
The tattered old clothes had been replaced with a black pair of trimly cut running shorts and a pristine white t-shirt with the line, "No idea works until you do the work," emblazoned on it. He was barefoot and cleanly shaven, seemed extremely fit, and sported a wonderful suntan, all of which made him look many years younger than he had appeared at the seminar. On his head he wore a black baseball cap, turned backward. His green eyes were still uncommonly clear, and his smile was astonishingly radiant. Yes, there was something exceedingly special about this man, as the entrepreneur had sensed. A white dove hovered over the tycoon, floating in the air for about 10 seconds as if suspended by magic. Then it flew off. Can you imagine this? It was a miraculous thing to see.
Let me give you two a hug, if you don't mind,
the billionaire enthused, wrapping his long arms around the entrepreneur and the artist at the same time, without waiting for a reply.
God, you have courage. Yes, you do, he mused. You trusted a disheveled old man, a total stranger. I know I looked like a vagrant the other day. Hey, it's not that I don't care about how I look. I just don't care that much about how I look, he said as he laughed at his own lack of self-consciousness. I just like to keep things real, nice and simple, completely authentic. Makes me think of that old insight. Having lots of money doesn't make you different. It just makes you more of who you were before you made the cash.
The billionaire peered out into the ocean and allowed the early rays of a fresh dawn to wash over him. He closed his eyes and inhaled deeply. The contours of his chiseled abdominal muscles were noticeable through his t-shirt. Next, he pulled a flower from the back pocket of his black shorts. Neither the entrepreneur nor the artist had ever seen a flower like this one. And it wasn't at all damaged from being in the billionaire's pocket. Strange.
Flowers are very important to anyone serious about creating magic in their work and private lives, spoke the mogul as he sniffed the petals. Anywho, I wanted to mention that my father was a farmer. I grew up on a farm before we moved to Southern California. We thought simple, spoke simple, ate simple, and lived simple. You can take the boy out of the country, you know, but you can't take the country out of the boy, he added, expressing an enthusiasm that was contagious while his sights were riveted on the magnificent sea. The entrepreneur and the artist thanked the billionaire profusely. They explained that their adventure so far had been phenomenal, and mentioned sincerely that the island and his exclusive beach were more beautiful than anything they had previously seen.
Utopia, isn't it? Said the billionaire as he put on his sunglasses. I am blessed, that's for sure. I'm so glad you cats are here.
So was it your father who got you into the habit of getting up with the sun? Asked the artist as they strolled along the water's edge.
A tiny crab raced by while three butterflies ascended above. Stunningly, the billionaire started twirling around like a whirling dervish. While he spun, he began to shout these words.
I would have it inscribed on the curtains of your chamber. If you do not rise early, you can make progress in nothing.
What are you doing? Questioned the entrepreneur.
It's an excellent quote from William Pitt, the Earl of Chatham. For some reason, I just felt the need to share it right now. Anywho, let me answer the question about my father, the billionaire said awkwardly. Yes and no. I watched him rise early every morning of my childhood. As with any good routine, he did it so many times that it became impossible for him not to do it. But like most kids, I resisted what my dad wanted me to do. I always had some form of rebel within me. I'm a bit of a pirate in a way. Rather than fight a small war with me every day for whatever reason, he just let me do what I wanted to do. So I'd sleep. Late.
Cool father, spoke the entrepreneur, who was dressed in yoga gear this morning and carried her device with her to make careful notes.
He was, affirmed the billionaire, warmly putting his arms around his students as they continued to walk slowly along the pristine beach.
Mr. Riley continued.
It was actually the spellbinder who taught me the 5 a.m. method. I was a young man when I first met him. I just launched my first company. I needed someone to guide me, challenge me, and develop me as an entrepreneur, a peak achiever, and as a leader. Everyone said he was the best executive coach in the world by far. He had a 3-year waiting list. So I called him every day until he agreed to become my mentor. He was pretty young back then, too, but his teachings had a depth of wisdom, a purity of power, and an ingenious impact that was remarkably advanced for his age.
And the early rising discipline helped, the artist broke in.
The billionaire smiled at the artist and stopped walking.
It was the one practice that changed and elevated every other practice. Researchers now call this kind of a core behavior that multiplies all your other regular patterns of performing a keystone habit. Wiring it in as a profound neural pathway took some effort, a little suffering along the way, and the strongest commitment I had in me. I'll be honest with you, there were days during the process of automating this routine that I was cranky. Days when my head pounded like a jackhammer, and mornings when I just wanted to keep sleeping. But once I locked and loaded getting up at 5 a.m. regularly, my days grew consistently and vastly better than anything I've ever experienced.
How? Both listeners wondered aloud in unison. The entrepreneur touched one of her fingers on the artist's arm affectionately, as if to suggest they were together in this experience, that they were now a team, and that she had his best interests at heart. The artist locked his eyes onto hers. A gentle grin emerged. The billionaire went on.
In this time of exponential change, overwhelming distractions and overflowing schedules, getting up at 5 a.m. and running the morning regime the Spellbinder taught me was my antidote to average. No more rushing in my morning. Imagine what that alone does for the quality of your day. Starting your day luxuriating in the quietude only the early morning provides. Beginning your day feeling strong and centered and free. I found that my mind became dramatically more focused as the days progressed. Every great performer, whether we're talking about a championship athlete, a top-tier executive, a celebrated architect, or a revered cellist, has developed the ability to concentrate on optimizing their particular skill for long, uninterrupted periods of time. This capability is one of the special factors that allows them to generate such high-quality results. In a world where too many people dilute their cognitive bandwidth and fragment their attention, accepting poor performances and ordinary achievements while leading lives of disappointing mediocrity.
"I definitely agree," indicated the artist. "It's rare to see someone focus on their art for many, many hours in a row these days. The Spellbinder was right when at his session he called people addicted to their devices cyber zombies. I see them every day. It's like they're not real human beings anymore. More like robots, glued to their screens, not present, and half alive to life."
"I hear you," said the billionaire. "Protection from distraction is precisely how you need to work if you're serious about dominating your field and winning at your craft. Neuroscientists call this peak mental state we're speaking of, where our perception becomes heightened and our availability to original ideas rises, and we access an all-new level of processing power, flow. And rising at 5 a.m. promotes the flow state gorgeously. Oh, and by getting up before daybreak, while almost everyone around you is asleep, my creativity also soared. My energy definitely doubled. My productivity surely tripled. My..."
"You're serious?" the entrepreneur interrupted, unable to contain her fascination with the idea that a simple shift toward a bespoke morning routine could reorder a human life so completely.
"Absolutely. Honesty has been one of my core convictions for all my years in business. Nothing beats going to sleep early each night with an unspoiled conscience and a mess-free heart. That's part of my farm boy nature, I guess," observed the billionaire.
Abruptly, the entrepreneur's phone signaled the arrival of an urgent incoming message. "So sorry. I told my team not to call me here. I was clear with them. I can't imagine why they're bothering me now," she said as she looked down at the screen. In all caps, the following stark words appeared: "Leave the company, or else you die." The entrepreneur fumbled with her phone. Then she accidentally dropped it into the sand. Soon she was gasping for air.
"What happened?"
the artist asked quickly, sensing trouble. Seeing the blood wash out of his friend's face and her hands trembling, he repeated with greater intensity and even higher empathy, "What happened?" The billionaire also appeared concerned.
"Are you okay? Do you need some water or something?"
"I just received a death threat from, my investors. They want my firm. They are, trying to kick me out because they think I have too big a share. They just told me that if I don't walk away, they'll, kill me." Instantly, the billionaire ripped off the sunglasses he was sporting and held them in the air, making a circling movement. Seconds later, from behind a flourish of palm trees, two large men with earpieces and rifles sprinted down to the beachfront as fast as a cyclist on steroids.
"Boss, you all right?" the tallest of the two big men asked tensely.
"Yes," came the confident and calm reply to his security detail. "But I need you two to check this out immediately. If it's cool for me to do this for you," he said as he looked at the entrepreneur, "I can help you make this go away."
The billionaire then muttered something to himself, and a flight of doves soared by.
"Sure, yes, I'd appreciate some help," the businesswoman replied, her voice still shaking
and pearls of perspiration appearing on her forehead, in the area where all those creases were.
"Leave this with us," declared the billionaire.
He then spoke to his protection people, politely, yet with an undeniable air of authority.
"Seems my guest here is being seriously harassed by some thugs hoping to take over her enterprise. Please figure out exactly what they're up to, and then present me with your solution."
"Don't worry," he told the entrepreneur.
"My guys are the best in the business. This won't be a problem."
Mr. Riley articulated this last sentence in a fashion that emphasized each word for powerful effect.
"Thank you very much," the entrepreneur responded, looking enormously relieved.
The artist held her hand tenderly.
"Okay if I continue?"
the billionaire requested, as the sun rose higher into the glamorous tropical sky. His guests nodded. An attendant, impeccably attired, emerged from a hut that sat higher up on the beach. It was painted green with white trim. Soon, the aide was serving the richest, most delicious coffee the entrepreneur and the artist had enjoyed in their lives.
"Fantastic cognitive enhancer when consumed in moderation each morning," expounded the billionaire as he sipped away. "And it's packed with antioxidants. So coffee also slows aging." "Anywho, where were we? I was telling you about the awesome benefit that flowed to me after I joined the 5 a.m. club and ran the morning methodology the Spellbinder revealed to me. It's called the 20-20-20 formula. And trust me, once you learn this concept alone and then apply it with persistency, your productivity, prosperity, performance, and impact will increase exponentially. I can't think of another ritual that has contributed to my success and well-being as much. I'm exceedingly low-key about what I've been able to accomplish in my business career. I've always viewed bragging as a major defect of character. The more powerful a person truly is, the less they need to promote it. And the stronger a leader is, the less they need to announce it."
"The Spellbinder spoke a bit about what you've been able to achieve," offered the entrepreneur, now looking even more relaxed.
"And the wild way you dressed at the conference definitely confirmed it," interjected the artist, flashing a sensational smile that showcased a few broken teeth.
"Rising at 5 a.m. every morning was the main personal practice that made most of that happen. Allowed me to become a visionary thinker. Gave me a reflective space to develop a formidable inner life. The discipline helped me to become ultra-fit, with all the beautiful income advancements as well as lifestyle enhancements that come with superior health. Early rising also made me a pretty amazing leader, and it helped me grow myself into a much better person. Even when the prostate cancer tried to devastate me, it was my morning routine that insulated me. It really was. I'll go into the 20-20-20 formula in an upcoming lesson, so you'll know exactly what to do to get amazing results from the first moment you wake up. You cats won't believe the power and value of the information that's coming. I'm so excited for you two. Welcome to paradise, and welcome to the first day of a substantially better life."
The entrepreneur slept more soundly that night in Mauritius than she had in years. Despite the threat she had received, the combination of the billionaire's brief instruction, the magnificence of the natural setting, the purity of the clean ocean air, and her growing fondness for the artist, caused her to let go of many of her concerns, and rediscover a state of calm she'd long since forgotten. Then, at precisely 3:33 a.m., she heard a thunderous bang on her door. She knew it was this time because she glanced at the alarm clock on the wooden night table in the stylish guest house her host had arranged for her to stay in. The entrepreneur assumed it was the artist, perhaps dealing with jet lag or sleepless after the excellent yet large dinner they had enjoyed together. Without asking who it was, she opened the door. No one was there. "Hello," she announced to a star-filled sky. Waves softly collided with the seashore near her cottage, and the scents of roses, incense, and sandalwood could be detected in the breeze. "Anyone here?" Silence. The entrepreneur carefully shut the door. This time she bolted the lock.
as she shuffled back to her bed that was covered with Egyptian cotton and English linens. Three mighty knocks pounded on the door.
Yes?
Cried the entrepreneur, now alarmed.
Yes?
We have the morning coffee you ordered, madam, a husky voice replied.
The entrepreneur's face was crowded by crevices again. Her heart began to thump vigorously. She grew deeply distressed, and her stomach filled with knots as humongous as the Alps.
They're bringing me coffee at this nutso hour? Unbelievable.
She returned to the front of the guest house, undid the lock, and opened the front door, haltingly. A stocky man with a disagreeable bald head and one eye that seemed out of joint stood there, smirking. He wore a red windbreaker and denim shorts that dropped just below his knees. Around his neck was a thin piece of blue string. Dangling from it was a plastic, laminated photo of a person's face. The entrepreneur squinted to see the face more clearly in the darkness. And as she did, she saw the image of an older man. One she knew very well. One she loved very much. One she missed considerably. The picture in the plastic she was studying was of her dead father.
"Who are you?" screamed the terrified entrepreneur. "How did you get this photo?"
"I've been sent by your business partners. We know everything there is to know about you. Everything. We've tracked all your personal data. We've hacked all your files. We've investigated your entire history."
The bald man in the windbreaker reached under the front of his belt and pulled out a knife, bringing it to within a few inches of the entrepreneur's thin and particularly veiny throat.
"No one can protect you now. We have an entire team focused on you. I'm not going to hurt you. Yet. This time's just about me making a point, giving you an in-person message. Leave your company, give up your equity, and say bye-bye. Or you get this blade in your neck when you least expect it, when you think you're safe, maybe with that chubby painter friend of yours."
The man pulled the knife away and replaced it under his belt.
"Have a good night, madam. It's been a pleasure meeting you. I know we'll see each other soon."
Then he reached forward and pulled the door shut with a slam. The entrepreneur, badly shaken, fell to her knees.
"Please, God help me. I can't take this anymore. I don't want to die."
Three more strikes came to the door. These ones were gentler.
"Hey, it's me. Please open the door."
The knocking startled the entrepreneur and woke her up. The tapping continued. She opened her eyes, peered around the lightless room, and realized she'd been caught in a bad dream. The businesswoman rose from her bed, shuffled across the wide planked oak floor, and opened the front door, knowing it was the artist after hearing his familiar voice.
"I just had the most insane dream," said the entrepreneur. "A brutal man showed up here, had a piece of plastic hanging from his neck with a photo of my dad in it, and threatened to stab me with a knife if I didn't give my firm over to the investors."
"You okay now?"
the artist asked softly.
"I'll be fine."
"I had an unusual dream, too," the artist explained. "I couldn't sleep after it. It's got me thinking about so many things. The quality of my art, the depth of my belief system, the foolishness of my excuses, my cynical attitude, my aggressiveness, my self-sabotage and my endless procrastination. I'm analyzing my daily routines and how I'll spend the rest of my life." "Hey, you sure you're okay?"
the artist questioned, realizing he was talking a little too much about himself and not empathizing with his alarmed companion.
"I'm fine. Better now that you're here."
"You sure?"
"Yes."
"I missed you," the artist said. "Do you mind if I tell you more about my dream?"
"Go ahead," encouraged the entrepreneur.
"Well, I was a little kid. At school, And every day, I'd pretend I was two things, a giant and a pirate. All day long, I believed I had the strength of a giant and the rule-breaking swagger of a pirate. I told my teachers I was these two characters, and at home I told my parents the same thing. My teachers laughed at me and put me down, telling me to be more realistic, to behave more like the other kids, and to stop all my ridiculous dreaming.
What did your parents say? Were they kinder to you? Asked the entrepreneur, now sitting on the sofa with her legs crossed in a yoga posture.
Same as my teachers. They told me I wasn't a giant, and that I definitely was no pirate. They reminded me that I was a little boy, and told me that if I didn't limit my imagination, stifle my creativity, and put an end to my fantasies, they'd punish me.
So what happened?
I did what I was told to do. I caved in. I bought into the attitudes of the adults. I made myself tinier instead of grander, so I'd be a good boy. I suffocated my hopes, gifts, and powers in an effort to conform, like most people do every single day of their lives. I'm starting to realize how much we've been hypnotized away from our brilliance and brainwashed out of our genius. The spellbinder and the billionaire are right.
Tell me more about your dream, the entrepreneur urged.
I began to mold myself to the system. I started to become a follower. I no longer believed I was as powerful as a giant and as swashbuckling as a pirate. I sheepwalked with the flock, becoming like everybody else. Eventually, I grew into a man who spent money I didn't have, buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. What a poor way to live.
I do some of that behavior, too, admitted the entrepreneur. I'm learning so much about myself, thanks to this very weird and hugely useful voyage. I'm starting to realize how superficial I've been, how selfish I am, and how many good things I actually have going for me in my life. Many people in the world couldn't even imagine experiencing all the blessings I have.
Got you, said the artist. So in my dream, I became a bookkeeper. I married and had a family. I lived in a subdivision and drove a good car. I had a fairly nice life, a few true friends, work that paid my mortgage, and a salary that handled my bills. But each day looked the same. Gray versus vivid, boring instead of enchanting. As I got older, the children left home to live lives of their own. My body aged, and my energy fell. And, unfortunately, my wife in my dream passed away. As I grew even older, my eyesight began to fail, my hearing began to fade, and my memory became extremely weak.
This is making me feel sad, voiced the entrepreneur, sounding vulnerable.
And when I got really old, I actually forgot where I lived, couldn't remember my name, and lost all sense of who I was in the community. But get this, I began to remember who I truly was again.
A giant and a pirate, right?
Exactly, replied the artist. The dream made me understand that I can't postpone doing amazing work anymore, that I can't put off improving my health, my happiness, my confidence, and even my love life.
Really? Wondered the entrepreneur wistfully.
Really?
Responded the artist. He then reached forward and kissed her on the forehead.
Chapter 9. A Framework for the Expression of Greatness. The men who are great live with that which is substantial, and they do not stay with that which is superficial. They abide with realities. They remain not with what is showy. The one they discard, the other they hold. Lao Tzu.
Hey, cats, boomed the billionaire. You're right on time, as usual. Nice work.
It was 5 a.m., and while the retreating outline of the moon remained in the sky, the rays of a new dawn greeted the three human beings standing on the perfect beach. The perfumed ocean breeze swirled with notes of red hibiscus, clove, and tuberose, A Mauritius kestrel, the rarest falcon in the world, flew overhead, and a pink pigeon, the scarcest on the planet, minded its business near a lush cluster of palm trees. A family of geckos shot by on their way to someplace important, and a giant Aldabra tortoise crawled along a grassy bank above the shore. All this natural splendor elevated the joy and electrified the spirits of the three members of the 5 a.m. club who stood on the sand. The billionaire pointed to a bottle floating in the ocean. As he waved his finger from side to side, the bottle moved from side to side. When he twirled a digit, the bottle in the water swirled with it. And when he lifted a hand slowly, the bottle appeared to rise above the surface of the ocean. Soon the container washed up onto the wet sand, and it became clear that a swatch of silk had been rolled up inside of it. Picture how mysterious all this seemed.
"A message in a bottle," declared the billionaire happily.
He started clapping his hands like a little tyke. He sure was an abnormal and totally wonderful character.
"This conveniently sets the tone for my mentoring session with you this morning," he added.
The industrialist then lifted the vessel, unscrewed the cap, and pulled out the fabric, which had a framework stitched onto it. It's reproduced on the enhancement. It was the three-step success formula.
"This is one of the simplest yet gnarliest of the teaching models the Spellbinder shared when he started coaching me as a young man," explained the billionaire, using more of his surfer slang. "And it'll provide the context for all the teachings that will follow. So, I really want you both to understand it intimately. At first glance, it seems like a really basic model, but as you integrate it over time, you'll see how profound it is."
Mr. Riley then closed his eyes, covered his ears with his hands, and recited these words. "The beginning of transformation is the increase of perception. As you see more, you can materialize more. And once you know better, you can achieve bigger. The great women and men of the world, the ones responsible for the magical symphonies, the beautiful movements, the advancements of science and the progress of technology, started by re-engineering their thinking and reinventing their awareness. In so doing, they entered a secret universe that the majority could not perceive, and this, in turn, allowed them to make the daily choices few choose to make, which automatically delivered the daily results few get to experience." The tycoon reopened his eyes. He raised an index finger to his lips, as if immersed in some splendidly weighty insight. Looking intently at the framework embedded into the silk, he continued. "Heroes, titans, and icons all have a personal trait that average performers just don't show, you know."
"Which is?" asked the artist,
who was dressed goofily in a muscle shirt and a Speedo swimsuit.
"Rigor," replied the billionaire. "The best in the world have depth. Members of the majority often get stuck in a mindset of superficiality in their work. Their whole approach is light. No real preparation, very little contemplation, and then the setting of a towering vision for the desired outcome, along with patiently considering the sequencing of executions that will result in an awesome result. The 95% of performers don't invest painstaking attention to the tiniest of details and fail to refine the smallest of finishes like the great masters do. For most people, the truth is that it's all about the path of least resistance, getting what they need to get done fast, and just sneaking by, mailing it in instead of bringing it on. The minority of exceptional creative achievers operate under a completely different philosophy."
"Tell me," replied the artist, intrigued.
"They apply a mentality of granularity instead of a mindset of superficiality. They have encoded depth as a lifetime value and exist under a profound insistence on greatness in all that they do. Exceptionalists fully understand that their creative output, no matter if they are bricklayers or bakers, chief executive officers or dairy farmers, astronauts or cashiers, represents their reputation. The best in any endeavor appreciate the fact that your good name is branded onto every piece of work that you release, and they get that you can't put a price tag on people saying superb things about you."
The billionaire rubbed the bottle,
Then he held it up and viewed the last evidence of the disappearing moon through its glass, before continuing his discourse.
But it goes deeper than social approval, the industrialist indicated. The grade of work you offer to the world reflects the strength of the respect you have for yourself. Those with unfathomable personal esteem wouldn't dare send out anything average. It would diminish them too much. If you want to lead your field, Mr. Riley went on, become a performer and person of depth, he reinforced. Commit to being a highly unusual human being, instead of one of those timid souls who behave like everyone else, living a sloppy life instead of a magnificent one, a derivative life instead of an original one.
Profound,
the artist contributed, showing great exuberance while taking off his muscle shirt to get some sun. In their work, the maestros of mastery are extraordinarily thoughtful. They think precisely about what they are doing. They hold their labor to the highest of standards and sweat the smallest of strokes. Like master sculptor Gian Lorenzo Bernini did as he crafted Fontana dei Quattro Fiumi, Fountain of the Four Rivers, his masterpiece that sits gloriously in the center of Piazza Navona in Rome. Such producers are meticulous and craft at near flawless. And as obvious as this sounds, they just really, really, really care. But people have a lot to do in their days, these days, interjected the entrepreneur. This isn't the 1600s. My inbox is full. My schedule is packed. I have back-to-back meetings most days. I need to do pitches. I feel like I can never keep up with all that's coming at me. Shooting for mastery isn't easy.
I understand, the billionaire replied kindly. Less is more, you know? You're attempting too much. Geniuses understand that it's smarter to create one masterwork than 1,000 ordinary pieces. One of the reasons I love being around the finest art is that the belief systems, emotional inspiration, and ways of working of those great virtuosos rub off on me. And I can tell you with absolute certainty, these epic performers inhabited an entirely different universe than most people in business and society populate today, as I've suggested.
Just then, a brilliantly colored butterfly perched on the very tip of Stone Riley's left ear. He smiled and said,
"Hey, little buddy, nice to see you again."
The magnate then added,
"When you deconstruct how the superstars, virtuosos, and geniuses achieved what they did, you'll realize that it was their heightened awareness of the opportunities for daily greatness that inspired them to make the better daily choices that yielded better daily results."
Mr. Riley pointed to the learning model.
"That's the power of self-education," he went on. "As you become aware of new ideas, you'll grow as a producer and as a person. As you escalate your personal and professional development, the level at which you implement and execute around your gorgeous ambitions will rise. And, of course, as your ability to make your dreams and visions into reality increases, you'll be rewarded with greater income and higher impact."
The magnate spoke as he tapped a finger onto step 3 of the diagram.
"This is why agreeing to this training with me was such a smart move, and this is what this framework here is designed to teach you."
The billionaire scratched his lean abs and inhaled a deep breath of ocean air.
"And may I say that because of the way the remarkable ones saw the world and how they behaved when it came to their crafts, and because they showed up in their lives so very differently from the way the mass of humanity operates, they were called kooks, misfits, weirdos. They weren't," exclaimed the billionaire exuberantly. "They just played at a much higher level, in rare air. They brought rigor to what they did. They'd spend weeks, months, sometimes years getting the finishing touches perfect. They forced themselves to stay with the work when they felt alone or scared or bored. They persisted in the translation of their heroic visions into everyday reality when they were misunderstood, ridiculed, and even attacked. God, I admire the great geniuses of the world. I really do."
"The further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those that speak it," offered the artist succinctly.
The entrepreneur looked at him as she began to rub a bracelet on her wrist.
"George Orwell said that," he pronounced. And whenever you are creating beauty around you, you are restoring your own soul, the artist carried on. Alice Walker said that.
The masters produce in a way that ordinary workers would label as obsessive, expounded the industrialist. But the reality of remarkability is that what the 95% of performers call picky behavior surrounding an important project, the top 5% of creators know is simply the price of admission for world class. Here, look at the model again so we can bring even more precision to your understanding around it, instructed the billionaire as he touched the diagram on the piece of silk. The majority of people on the planet today really are trapped in superficiality, he confirmed. Superficial understanding of their power to rise, superficial intimacy with the possibilities of their potential, superficial knowledge of the neurobiology of mastery, the daily routines of the world builders, and the very ambitions they wish to prioritize the remainder of their lives around. The majority is stuck in vague, imprecise thinking, and vague, imprecise thinking yields vague, imprecise results. A quick example? Ask the average person for directions, and most of the time, you'll discover their instructions are unclear. That's because the way they think is unclear, said the billionaire as he picked up a stick from the beach and pointed it toward the word granularity on the framework. Legendary achievers are vastly different. They get that amateur levels of awareness will never lead to the highest grade of professional results. Another example that I hope will dial in this important insight for you two. I'm a huge fan of Formula One racing. I was invited to hang out with my favorite team in the pit area recently. Their attention to the slightest of particulars, their dedication to the demonstration of extreme excellence, and their willingness to do whatever it took to make things great was not only validating, but tremendously inspiring. Again, to the ordinary person, the suggestion of the need for an obsessive attention to the most minor of details and the importance of a ridiculously rigorous approach in their pro and private lives seems odd. But that F1 crew, their flawless calibration of the race car, their superhuman speed in executing pit stops, and even the way they cleaned the pit area with an industrial vacuum cleaner after the car roared away, so there wasn't even a hint of dirt anywhere, was fantastic. This is my point. The top 5% go granular versus applying a superficial mindset to their daily attitudes, behaviors, and activities.
They really sweat the fine points so much they removed the dirt from the pit area after the race car left? Questioned the artist, fascinated.
Yep, remarked the billionaire. They swept and vacuumed the whole bay. And when I asked them why, they told me that if even a molecule of sediment got into the race machine's engine, it could cost them a win. Or, even worse, it could result in the loss of a life. Actually, any small failure of even one team member to act with precision could create a tragedy. One loose screw left by an unfocused crew member could lead to a calamity. One checklist item missed by a distracted associate might cause a catastrophe. Or one missing measurement overlooked by a squad partner leaving some of his precious attention on the phone he was playing with prior to the pit stop could cost a victory.
I'm beginning to agree with you that the approach you are speaking of is important, admitted the entrepreneur. Very few business people and those in other fields like the arts, sciences, and sports think and behave like this anymore. It used to be normal, I guess. Developing high awareness around the things that we do, and having a painstaking approach to making our work perfect. Refining the details, sweating the little points. Producing with precision rather than being unprofessional and careless. Under-promising and over-delivering. Taking immense pride in our craft. Going deep and embracing, to use your words, granularity versus superficiality.
I must give credit where it's due, said the billionaire humbly. This languaging and this model was taught to me by the Spellbinder. But yes, small things matter when it comes to mastery. I read somewhere that the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, which broke so many hearts, was caused by the failure of a single O-ring seal that some experts valued at 70 cents. A horrific ending of lives was caused by a flaw around what appeared to be an insignificant detail.
This all makes me think of the Dutch genius Vermeer, the artist contributed. He was a painter who pursued work of the highest quality. He experimented with different techniques that would allow natural light to fall in a way that made his art look three-dimensional. There was such a depth to what he created, such attractiveness to each stroke, and such refinement in every move. So I agree, too. The average artist has a really light, basic, impatient approach to their painting. Their focus is more on the cash than on the craft. Their attention is on the fame, not the finesse. I guess that because of this, they never build the higher awareness and acumen that will help them make the better choices, that will give them the better results, that will make them the legends of their fields. I'm starting to get how powerful this simple model is.
I love Vermeer's Woman in Blue Reading a Letter, and, of course, Girl with a Pearl Earring, said the billionaire, cementing the fact that he appreciated great art.
I love this insight that you're sharing with us, observed the entrepreneur as her eyes widened. She then grasped the artist's hand. Mr. Riley winked.
I knew this was coming, he muttered with obvious happiness on seeing their growing romantic connection.
He closed his eyes once again. The butterfly was still sitting on the ear of the eccentric tycoon as it flapped its exotic colored wings. Mr. Riley spoke these words from the mighty poet Rumi. Gamble everything for love, if you are a true human being. If not, leave this gathering. Half-heartedness doesn't reach into majesty.
Can I ask you a question? Wondered the entrepreneur.
Absolutely, replied the billionaire.
How does this philosophy of rigor and granularity play out in personal relationships?
Not well, was the candid reply of the shirtless baron.
The Spellbinder schooled me on a concept called the dark side of genius. Basically, the idea is that every human gift comes with a downside, and the very quality that makes you special in one area is the same one that makes you a misfit in another. The reality is that many of the great virtuosos of the world had messy private lives. The very gifts of seeing a vision few else could see, holding themselves to the absolute highest of standards, being content alone for long stretches of time as they worked monomaniacally detailing the most minor points on their projects, behaving relentlessly in following through on their masterpieces, acting with rarely seen self-discipline, and listening to their hearts while ignoring their critics, made personal relationships hard. They were misunderstood and seen as difficult and different, rigid, and unbalanced.
The billionaire then fell to the sand and started doing more push-ups at a ferocious pace. Next, while staring at a white dove that glided over the roof of his oceanside home, he did 20 burpees. Then he carried on.
And many of these legends of creativity, productivity, and world-class performance were out of balance, the magnate stated. They were perfectionists, mavericks, and fanatics. This is the dark side of genius. The very things that make you amazing at your craft can devastate your home life.
Just telling you cats the truth, observed the billionaire as he sipped from a water bottle that had tiny lettering on it.
If you looked at it closely and carefully, here's what you'd read. Philip of Macedonia, in a message to Sparta. You are advised to submit without further delay, for if I bring my army into your land, I will destroy your farms, slay your people, and raise your city. Sparta's reply, if.
But just because your gifts have downsides to them doesn't mean you shouldn't express them, expounded the billionaire energetically. You just need to develop awareness around where they can lead you into trouble in your personal life and then manage those traps. And this brings me beautifully back to this morning's learning model that really does set the stage for everything you'll learn about the transformational value of the 5 a.m. club and how to lock it in as an enduring habit.
The industrialist bent down, picked up a sea-worn stick, and touched it to the silk swatch.
Please always remember the core maxim for elite performance that this framework for personal greatness has been built around. With better daily awareness, you can make better daily choices.
And with better daily choices, you'll start seeing better daily results. The Spellbinder calls this the three-step success formula. See, with better awareness of your natural ability to achieve great things, for example, or on how installing the 5 a.m. method into your morning routine will upgrade your productivity, you'll rise from the community of superficiality that currently dominates the earth up into the society of granularity. This heightened level of insight and consciousness will then optimize your daily decisions. And logically, once you get your daily choices right, you'll accelerate your leadership, accomplishment, and impact dramatically. Because it's your decisions that make your results. For one of our coaching sessions, the billionaire continued, the Spellbinder and I met in Lucerne, Switzerland. Such a pretty city set on a magnificent lake, surrounded by breathtaking mountains. Sort of a fairy tale kind of a place. Anywho, one morning he ordered a pot of hot water, along with some lemon wedges, so he could have the fresh lemon tea he enjoys sipping most mornings. Here's the thing.
This should be interesting, the artist interrupted, as he scratched an arm with a tattoo built around an Andy Warhol quote that said, I never think that people die, they just go to department stores.
The tray arrived, the billionaire went on. Perfect silverware, excellent china, everything calibrated to the highest order. And get this, whoever cut the lemons in the kitchen exercised the deep craft rigor essential to sustained mastery by actually going the extra mile and carving the seeds out of the wedges. Amazing, right? The billionaire began to do the same quirky dance that he did at the conference center. Then he stopped. The entrepreneur and the artist shook their heads. A pretty uncommon level of care and attention to detail in a world of such superficiality and performers stuck in apathy, said the entrepreneur, pretending not to be distracted by the moguls dancing. The Spellbinder calls the phenomenon pervading commerce these days the collective deprofessionalization of business, noted the billionaire. People who should be working, delighting customers, showcasing extraordinary skills, unlocking otherworldly value for their organizations so both they and their firms experience success, are watching inane videos on their phones, shopping online for shoes, or scrolling through their social feeds. I've never seen people so disengaged at work, so checked out, and so exhausted. And I've never seen people making so many mistakes. The billionaire pointed the crooked stick at the three-step success formula again. De-seeding the lemon wedges is a fine metaphor to challenge you to consistently make the shift from superficiality to granularity. Real rigor in terms of your approach to not only what you do at work, but how you operate in your private life. True depth as it relates to how you think, behave, and deliver. Healthy perfectionism and an unyielding quest to be the best that you are capable of becoming is what I'm suggesting to you two good folks here on this awesome beach. This will give you what the Spellbinder calls a GCA, gargantuan competitive advantage. It's never been so easy to own the sport and business today, because so few performers are doing the things required to reach industry dominance. Mastery is a rarity, and people who play at a brilliant level are a scarcity. So the field is yours. If you show up the way I'm encouraging you to show up, here's the powerful insight. There's a ton of competition at ordinary, but there's almost none at extraordinary. There's never been such a glamorous opportunity to become peerless, because so few people are dedicated to world-class in this age of such scattered focus, eroded values, and deteriorated faith in ourselves along with the inherent primal power we hold. How often do you meet someone at a store or in a restaurant who is fully present, astoundingly polite, unusually knowledgeable, full of enthusiasm, incredibly hardworking, intensely imaginative, noticeably inventive, and gasp-worthily great at what they do? Almost never, right? Yes, acknowledged the entrepreneur. I'd have to interview thousands of people to find one treasure like this. So you cats have a GCA. Lucky you, shouted the billionaire. You can pretty much dominate your fields because so few are like this now. Raise your commitment,
step up your standards, and then get busy on hardwiring in this way of being as your default. And that's really important. You have to optimize daily. Consistency really is the DNA of mastery. And small, daily, seemingly insignificant improvements, when done consistently over time, yield staggering results. Please remember that great companies and wonderful lives don't happen by sudden revolution. Nope, they materialize via incremental evolution. Tiny daily wins and iterations stack into outcomes of excellence over the long term. But few of us have the patience these days to endure the long game. As a result, not many of us ever become legends.
All this information is fantastic and so valuable for my art, the artist said gratefully as he put his shirt back on.
Wonderful to hear, acknowledged the billionaire. Look, I know that you both have experienced a ton of learning in a very short time. I understand that getting up early is a new skill you're installing, and everything you've heard about chasing greatness, leaving the crowd, relinquishing average and renouncing ordinary is probably overwhelming. So just breathe and relax, please. Exceptionalism is a journey. Virtuosity is a voyage. Rome wasn't built in a day, right?
Right, agreed the artist.
Definitely, accepted the entrepreneur. And I also get that rising into the more pure reaches of your superior strengths and most sovereign human gifts is an uncomfortable and scary process. I've been through it, and the rewards that are on their way to you as you remain dedicated to learning the 5 a.m. method are worth more than any amount of money, fame, and worldly power you'll ever have. And what I've taught you today is a necessary component to the system for waking before daybreak and preparing yourself to be an elite achiever and luminous human being that we'll go much deeper into in our upcoming sessions together. I guess what I really want to say before I let you cats go for this morning, so you can go have some fun, is that while growth as a producer and as a person can be hard, it truly is the finest work a human being can ever do. And fully remember that you are most alive when your heart beats quickest, and we are most awake when our fears scream loudest.
So we need to keep going ahead, right? Confirmed the entrepreneur as a lovely ocean breeze washed through her brown hair.
Absolutely, said the tycoon. All shadows of insecurity dissolve in the warm glow of persistency. Okay, one last example about assuming a rigorous approach in your professional and home life and gaining a GCA by going all granular on important projects, around essential skills and during meaningful activities. After that, I'd love for you two to go swimming, snorkeling, and sunbathing. You should see the spectacular lunch my team has prepared for you. I need to head into Port Louis for a meeting, but I really hope you both will make yourselves at home. So,
Mr. Riley stopped for a moment, reached down and touched his toes four times while muttering the following mantra.
Today is a glorious day, and I'll live it at excellence. With boundless enthusiasm and limitless integrity, true to my visions and with a heart full of love. I remember reading an article, the billionaire continued, where the CEO of Moncler, the Italian fashion company, was asked what his favorite food was. He replied it was spaghetti pomodoro. Then he shared that while this dish seems strikingly simple to prepare, as it's only pasta, fresh tomatoes, olive oil, and basil, the executive remarked that to get the calibration correct takes unusual expertise and uncommon prowess. That's an important word for all three of us to keep top of mind as we tighten up our A games, elevate our performance, and accelerate our contribution to the world. Calibration. Dialing in the finest of attitudes and refining the littlest of details is what granularity and ascension into the orbit of your inherent genius and a life magically lived is all about. The eccentric magnate then placed a piece of silk from the bottle into a pocket of his shorts and vanished.
Chapter 10. The Four Focuses of History Makers. The life given us by nature is short, but the memory of a well-spent life is eternal. Cicero.
The sunrise was dazzling as the entrepreneur and the artist walked hand in hand along the seashore to meet the billionaire at the designated meeting spot for the next morning's mentoring class. Mr. Riley was already there when they arrived, sitting on the sand, eyes closed in a deep meditation. He was shirtless, wearing camouflage-patterned shorts similar to the ones the Spellbinder styled the day he appeared on the beach, and a pair of rubber diving booties with smiley face emojis scattered over them. You would have been more than amused if you saw him in them. An assistant rushed out of the billionaire's home the instant he raised a hand toward the heavens, displaying the universal victory sign. Three crisp pages of paper were efficiently extracted from a shiny black leather satchel and handed to the titan of industry without a word being exchanged. Stone Riley simply offered a slight bow of appreciation. In turn, he gave a sheet to each of his two students. It was exactly 5 a.m. The billionaire then picked up a seashell and skipped it across the water. It appeared as if he had something profound on his mind this morning. Gone were the usual lightheartedness, festivity, and awkward antics. "You okay?" inquired the entrepreneur as she touched a bracelet engraved with the words, "Straight on hustle, rise and grind, I'll sleep when I'm dead." The tycoon read the words on the bangle. He placed a finger onto his lips. "Who will cry when you die?" he asked. "What?" exclaimed the artist. "What will those who know you whisper about how you lived once you're no longer here?" The billionaire articulated the question in the manner of a skilled actor. "You live as if you were destined to live forever. No thought of your frailty ever enters your head. Of how much time has already gone by, you take no heed. You squander time as if you drew from a full and abundant supply. Though all the while, that day which you bestow on some person or thing is perhaps your last." "Those are your thoughts? Brilliant," stated the artist. The billionaire looked mildly embarrassed. "I wish. No, they belong to the Stoic philosopher Seneca. They came from his treatise on the shortness of life." "So why are we talking about death on this beautiful morning exactly?" queried the entrepreneur, appearing a little uncomfortable. "Because most of us alive today wish we had more time. Yet we waste the time we have. Thinking about dying brings what matters most into much sharper focus. You'll stop allowing digital distraction, cyber diversions, and online nuisances to steal the irreplaceable hours of the blessing called your life. You never get your days back, you know," said the billionaire in a friendly but firm fashion. "I reread Chasing Daylight yesterday after my meeting in town. It's the true story of high-powered CEO Eugene O'Kelly, who was informed he had only a few months left to live when his doctor discovered he had 3 brain tumors."
"So what did he do?" asked the artist softly.
"He organized his last days with the same commitment to orderliness he ran his business life by. O'Kelly tried to make up for the school concerts he'd missed, the family outings he'd passed up, and the friendships he'd forgotten. In one part of the book, he shared how he'd ask a friend out for a walk in nature, and that this was sometimes not only the final time we would take such a leisurely walk together, but also the first time." "Sad," was the contribution of the entrepreneur, as she nervously played with her bracelet. The worry lines on her forehead reappeared in full blazing glory. "Then last night I watched the